From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour goes back to 1869. That was the first documented time, at least to this researcher, that the number of bees had started to dwindle in certain places. Now, no one was quite sure why in 1869, and while it certainly wasn't an epidemic, it raised a little bit of concern. They began referring to disappearing disease, or the spring dwindle. And it wasn't until all the way in 2006 that we heard the term colony collapse disorder. And in recent years, the number of bees dying has spiked in alarming fashion to some. What is causing it? It remained a mystery. This week, there is apparently new claims for what could be driving the colony collapse. We'll talk about that. In this hour, we're talking about all things bees. More homeowners are deciding that they want to remove bees from their area, their yard, their house, in a safe way that does not destroy them. So what works and what doesn't? And how can we identify what kind of bees or other insects are living around our home? Joining us to help are two of, I think, the best authorities we could find on this. Walt Nelson's the horticulture program leader of Cornell Cooperative Extension of Monroe County. Walt, nice to see you.
Thank you.
Pat Bono is here. She is many things. Pat is the owner of Seaway Trail Honey. She's the organizer of Rochester Beekeepers. She's the project director of the New York State Bee Wellness Program, and she has been a statewide director as well when it comes to all things bees and honey. How are you?
Thank you.
Did I get some of the background right there, Pat?
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, the main thing I'm working on right now is the USDA-funded program New York Bee Wellness, which trains beekeepers in New York State and surrounding states how to recognize bee disease.
All right, so for our listeners, if you want to join the conversation with questions about bees, we're going to do that in a moment. But first, we're going to have a brief diversion. We're going to go to Albany. Our Capital Bureau correspondent, Karen DeWitt, is on the phone because there are some goings-on there. Karen, there's always goings-on there. How are you, Karen?
I'm good, Evan. I'm trying to relate the bees to what's been happening at the convention here. Perhaps Governor Cuomo, who's fond of summits on yogurt and such and such,
yes,
a beekeeping summit at some point.
What's the buzz on the bees?
There you go.
Right. Well, I am on Long Island where the...
Oh, we lost you for a second, Karen, just for a moment. Hopefully Karen will flutter back into range. Oh, look at that. Karen, we've lost you. That's the buzz on Karen. Karen's actually down there where Governor Cuomo this week announced that Kathy Hochul is his candidate for lieutenant governor and replacing Bob Duffy on the ticket. So Karen was going to talk to us about that and a few other things. But why don't we do this? We'll get see if our engineer can get Karen back on the line. And until we do, let's do this. You can join the conversation on all things insects, bees, etc. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Walt, I called Walt this week at Cornell Cooperative Extension because I heard three different people essentially say the same thing, which is that they had encountered bees around their property. But because of the recent coverage of colony collapse disorder in recent years, they felt guilty about the old methods of just exterminating them, and they wanted to find a way to humanely address this. And you said to me on the phone, that's great to hear. And maybe you're hearing some of that, a little more conscientious approach.
I think we do. But one of the bigger questions that I would come back with and wonder is what are the bees that they're concerned about? Honeybees are a Europe, Asian, and African native, not native to North America. And they are a gregarious, they're a colony bee, so they have an incentive to protect that crowd back at the hive, and they can get a little testy at times if you get in their way. And then there's a large number of other bees we call, often called in a larger group, but the solitary bees, where you have a single bee that is out there foraging and laying eggs on her own, and it's a single parent, as it were, and she's not really interested in picking a fight with you, because it's either fight with you or have lunch, and which would I rather do? I think I'd rather eat than fight.
Right.
And so they're going to pretty much well leave us alone unless you really torment them. You pick them up and start playing with them, something like that. Then they may sting you. But our native bees are solitary, and they're not going to bother you. They may buzz around. They may look like they're threatening you, but you're between them and lunch. Maybe the one exception to that would be the bumblebee, a little larger insect that if you bother it, it may decide that it wants to get some sort of revenge on you.
Well, we're going to be tapping into all that. I've got so many questions, by the way, and I'm so excited to be talking bees with Walt and Pat. Let's try Karen one more time. Karen, can you hear me?
Yes, I apologize. There's thousands of people here, and it's overwhelming the phone lines. Governor Cuomo just finished his speech. He certainly fired up his party. They were very excited, yelling, screaming, chanting. And he gave a standard stump speech where he listed accomplishments, same-sex marriage, the passage of that, the property tax cap. But he said there's still a lot more work to be done. The property taxes have to be lower. He wants public campaign financing and the DREAM Act. And he says that's why he needs to be elected for another 4 years. He did not mention his opponent, Rob Astorino, by name, but sort of painted them without naming him as this kind of backwards-thinking extremist that is going to take New York backwards and isn't positive enough about it. Kathy Hochul also got a very good reception. She's former Western New York congresswoman, Erie County clerk. She's replacing Bob Duffy on the ticket as lieutenant governor because, as we know, Bob Duffy essentially didn't want to do it anymore. He didn't want to drive around the state. He was getting tired of it. Though Duffy was really treated very well at this convention, he gave a lot of speeches, and he was really, heralded and complimented. There seemed to be no ill will there at all. But Hochul seemed very exciting to the crowd as well. So, it was a successful convention for them. We'll see what happens next.
Karen, I heard the governor saying that it's a big deal for Buffalo to have the lieutenant governor candidate from your area. And here in Rochester, a lot of people may feel after 4 years that it's not that big of a deal and that in some ways that slot is just doesn't have much consequence. Is that wrong?
Well, yeah, I think that's true. I think the governor focused a lot more on Buffalo than Rochester, partly because he lost in that region of the state to Carl Palladino in 2010, and it's apparently bothered him ever since. So, yeah, Buffalo has seemed to get a lot more attention, certainly than any other upstate area. He's been there so many times that, he jokes that he should get an apartment there, or he's from there. So, I think that it will mean that Buffalo gets more attention, but Cuomo has other reasons. It's not because of the lieutenant governor, but that's partly why he picked her, I think, because he's probably going to win. I mean, odds are he will, but he wants to win big, and he wants to win Buffalo. He would be embarrassed to lose that region, two times in a row.
Karen, before I let you go here, he does want to win big, but Rob Astorino's people have told me, and they've probably told you, that they think it's not unrealistic that they have a shot here. And again, they've been talking about galvanizing voters right and left here. What do you think the governor thinks is his biggest vulnerability based on what you're hearing from him?
Well, it seems to me that he thinks the biggest vulnerability is probably the suburban swing voters. That's why I am all the way down at the other end of the state in Long Island where they're having this convention. He seems to be looking to them because they might go either way and might be swayed by Astorino's message. It's not inconceivable that Astorino could win this race, but a lot of things would have to go in his favor and some things would have to change.
Do you think that there is room at the convention there for the bees?
For the bees? As long as they're not in the mood to sting anyone, sure.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Karen. Always nice to catch up with you. We'll look for your reporting later today on WXXI and WXXINews.org. Thank you very much, Karen.
Thank you.
Karen DeWitt reporting for us from the convention with Governor Cuomo and his running mate now, Kathy Hochul, replacing Bob Duffy as lieutenant governor candidate there. Okay, so we're having a discussion this hour on what's going on, not only with colony collapse disorder, but also just in general, how to identify what's going on around outside your home. And Walt Nelson from Cornell Cooperative Extension was making the point that most of the time they're not going to be aggressive and come after you. But, Walt, we already had a question. Jennifer wrote in to ask, is it true that only female bees can sting? I have no idea.
You're only going to really see the females out. The guys stay home.
Of all sorts, of all bees, the guys stay home?
I don't know. I've seen a male out and about.
What do you think, Pat? I mean, is that your understanding as well?
Well, right now, this is a really important year. It's a big increase for all the bees everywhere. All the queens are laying a lot of eggs, producing more bees, and among those bees are the males, because the males are the ones that have to go out and mate with the new queens that come from these colonies. And yes, most of the bees that you do see, they're all worker bees and they're all female bees. And the female bees do sting. The male bees do not have a stinger.
Okay, so if generally if you see a bee out and about buzzing around your yard, though, it's likely to be a female.
Correct.
You see, I had everything wrong about this. I always thought the big, furry, thick ones were the queens or the female, and that's not apparently right. Is that not right?
You have to get into the hive to see the queen.
Okay, that's not the queen.
They pretty well, they protect her and hide her, and you open up a hive, you can you forage around in there, move around, and you'll see the queen because she is larger than the other bees in the hive, but she's pretty well tucked away there.
So what is the what are the big furry? Is that just a bumblebee, the big furry ones that we see out and about?
Yes.
That could be the bumblebee, or it could be the carpenter bee because they are, you know, from 3 foot away or 4 foot away, they're identical. One has a fuzzy abdomen, the other has a shiny abdomen, but they're black and yellow and about the same size, approximately the same size.
Queens,
they have different habits. But
queens are homebodies. They don't leave home.
Of the honeybees.
Only in rare occasions. But because we're having this big spring increase, I have a list in front of me here. It's called the Bee Swarm List because I am starting to get phone calls from people in Monroe County and other areas where they have bees. The bees might be in their house. Or some people are saying there's bees in their lawns. They have children. They're concerned. On the Rochester Beekeepers website, there is a page that talks about these bees in the ground. They are solitary bees. They really don't sting. They're only around for a few weeks, and then you won't see them the rest of the year. Those are called minor bees. If you've got them, consider yourself lucky. They're native pollinators, and they're not really a nuisance. Most people are just afraid because they look very similar to honeybees.
Okay, so those are minor bees in the ground.
Right.
They're the ones
who are mining.
And let me see if I can find the question because we already had this. The difference, we had one of our listeners, Bill, asking, last year we had a hive on a tree and a hive in a hole in the ground. What's the difference? So I guess the hole in the ground is the minor bees.
It may not be a bee. It could be one of the stinging wasps, a stinging insect, not as a bee.
And they can create a hive in the ground as well.
Wasps, you have ground wasps, but this time of year, you're really talking about bees. Now, bees are cavity nesters, so they won't build a nest in the ground. They're looking for a hollow tree, someone's soffit, some other convenient place where they can build beeswax, comb, honeycomb within a cavity somewhere. So right now, like I said, the queens are laying a lot of eggs. It's the spring increase. So the phone calls I'm getting from people, they have bees in their soffit. And so when they call me up, I can give them names of beekeepers in the area who will go out and size up the situation and see if they can remove them.
Yeah, this is, I think, an important part of the conversation here because that's what prompted me to want to look at this subject on the show. It's that we've been hearing from people who say, I want them out of the yard.
Right.
But with everything that's happened with colony collapse disorder, I don't want to kill them or I don't want to do the old easy way, et cetera, et cetera.
Guilt factor.
Okay. And what do you think about that, Pat? Are you happy to hear that people are responding that way at least?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear people are conscientious about that.
Yeah.
And this list I have, it was a very harsh winter for beekeepers. So you're really doing a favor by calling like the Cooperative Extension Master Gardener and asking for a beekeeper to come out and deal with the situation.
How do they do it?
How do the beekeepers?
Yeah, how do they remove them without, how do they remove them successfully and take them and obviously not hurt them?
If it's in a house, carpentry skills are involved. No, not a lot of beekeepers do this sort of thing. A lot of beekeepers like myself will go out and get swarms. And bee swarms where they're hanging off a tree or a branch somewhere, I can handle, and we'll be seeing a lot of those in the next few weeks. We'll be getting a lot of calls. This is the time of year for that.
And you essentially just take – we've all seen the big hive hanging off a tree. I had one in my yard several years ago. Do you go and essentially just cut it down and take it with you, or are there other ways to remove the bees?
Shake them out of the tree.
Yeah, some people.
Is that right?
Some people just come along. There's a video on the Rochester Beekeepers homepage of some guys just going to someone's front door. They have a fruit tree, and there was a bee swarm. They just opened a cardboard box, knocked the bees in, taped the box, and take the bees away and put them in a beehive at their home.
I've taken an empty beehive and put it under the tree or at the base of the fence post where there was a swarm, and you vigorously shake the tree or you vigorously shake the post, and it's sort of hard for me to get my head around, but they don't fly off. They fall down into the box. And now there's a few that hang on the fence post, and you brush those off in the box, and they stay in the box, and you take it back to wherever you want to put the hive.
Yeah, one thing I want to say, when you see a bee swarm, I mean, it looks frightening when the bees are actually swarming the honeybees. They're not in a stinging mode. They're more concentrating on finding a place to go in mass. And, of course, they're following where the queen is going to go. But generally, if someone has a bee swarm, they'll bunch up on a branch, and then you can call a beekeeper, and they generally stay there anywhere from a few days to a few hours. And that's called a bivouac. The bees leave their original hive, land somewhere temporarily, the bivouac, and then from there the scout bees determine where to go next, whether it be someone's soffit, an empty beehive, hopefully
yours.
In many cases, yeah, the bees that died, they're repopulated, or a hollow tree somewhere.
If they're swarming, are they generally following the queen?
Yes. Wherever the queen alights, the bees will follow.
The original hive with the queen that overwintered, she's laying lots of eggs, and she's now going to have a lot of competition. And there'll be a negotiation process, and because that hive will only have one queen, and the other queen or the other queens will leave. They will swarm, they will lobby to take some of their friends with them, and off they go.
We're already getting calls, and we've got some interesting questions on what is safe to use in terms of chemicals, if there are any. We're going to get to those in a second, but let's grab a call from Rick in Brighton. Rick, go ahead.
Hi. I actually entered this a little late, so I'm not sure what was covered before, but just listening, it's very interesting. It seems to me that from my experience for years here in the Rochester area, and most people I know, that most of the concern, it seems like a lot of the focus is being concerned about bees in your yard. It seems like the vast majority of problems that people see are actually what are commonly called as yellow jackets. And they seem to be the most aggressive, and I think that might be what a lot of people are mistaking for bees. Am I correct that seems to be probably one of the biggest nuisance stinging insects in the area?
I would suggest yes. Honeybees are after food, and yes, the wasps and the yellow jackets are also pollinators. But they tend to have more of an attitude of aggression than honeybees do, and that would more often be the case. But this early in the season, there's plenty of forage for them, and those are also bulking up their numbers. So they're a lot more passive at this time of year than they are later on in the season when, winter's threatening.
Yeah, wasps, just like bumblebees, only the queen survives the winter. So basically in the springtime, they're starting from very low numbers, whereas honeybees they're dealing with thousands, whereas wasps, yellow jackets, bumblebees, they have to build up their population. So they get to be a real problem towards the end of the summer when people really have their picnics outside. They're the ones that coming around, going for the hamburgers and really causing problems.
What is go ahead.
Are major pollinators too?
He asked if they're major pollinators too.
They are a significant pollinator, yeah. But since I'm allergic to them and not the honeybee, I'm not real anxious to have those pollinators necessarily close to my side door.
Thanks for the call, Rick. I appreciate that. He mentioned yellow jackets being more aggressive. I always think of wasps as the most aggressive. Is that wrong, Walt?
I think they duke it out for who wants to be top dog on that one.
I had a question online about whether wasps can sting multiple times without dying the way bees can, the way bees can't.
Yes, they can.
Honeybees have barbed stingers, like a fish hook. So when they sting, They can only sting once. It gets caught in your skin, and when they go to walk away from the sting, it pulls out their innards, their guts, basically.
But not wasps.
No.
Wasps are just a flaw of evolution. It's not perfect evolution. I mean, you get these weird things that happen, and, you know, don't you think, Walt? I mean, they're a mistake.
They have a purpose. I just have difficulty understanding it sometimes.
it was Ogden Nash, the great poet Ogden Nash, who wrote a poem called The Fly, and the extent of the poem is, God in his wisdom created the fly and then forgot to tell us why. That's how I feel about the wasp. If you want to join the conversation, if you have questions about removal, and we're going to be getting to colony collapse disorder and some other ideas about that, or if you have questions about beekeeping, you can join the conversation, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, whether you're listening here in Rochester on AM 1370 in our area, all the way down to Ithaca on 89.5 FM on WEOS. But if you are in Rochester and you're used to the old number, it still works, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Walt Nelson's here. He's a horticulture program leader of Cornell Cooperative Extension. Pat Bono is here. She is the owner of Seaway Trail Honey and the organizer of Rochester Beekeepers, also the project director of the New York State Bee Wellness Program. So, we know you've got some questions about some chemicals around the yard. And one of the questions we had, oh boy, I see the phone starting to fire up again. So while we're getting those calls, let me ask Walt and Pat the question about chrysanthemum. That was a question we had from one of our listeners about whether chrysanthemum is safe to use to remove bees from the yard. Walt?
That plant is a pyrethroid, and there are natural pyrethroids that are derived from that plant that can be used as an insecticide. And then there are synthetic pyrethroids that mimic the natural that can also be used as an insecticide. But from my view, I think they are as harsh, whether it be the natural or the synthetic pyrethroid, they are as harsh against bees as any polycarbonated pesticide that was manufactured or formulated in a laboratory. They're all going to be nasty on bees.
So chrysanthemum will kill them?
Yes, it could.
It's not just something
You're not going to buy a garden mom and grind it up and spray. That's not going to give you the pyrethroid. There's a cousin of the chrysanthemum that we might have as a flower that is used to derive the pyrethroid.
Okay.
Or pyrethrin.
Yeah, one important thing is as far as treating plants in your yard, to avoid anything, spraying anything that's flowering. If there's a flower, chances are there's going to be a bee going to it. So anything you put on that flower, there's a good chance the bee is going to take.
Let's grab Steve in Rochester. Go ahead, Steve.
Evan, you should work overnights.
Why is that?
Because then I wouldn't hear BBC. No. the other night on BBC from Africa, they were talking about bees to control elephants. They're moving bee colonies to areas where the elephants are imposing on the farms, and they actually scare the elephants away. And I just wondered if they had any, your guests had anything.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I appreciate that, and I'm at least happy to tell you that our re-air is on from 9 to 11, though that doesn't necessarily count as overnight. But 9 to 11 is a re-air of the full 2 hours of Connections every day now, so we're happy about that. Thanks for the call, Steve. Let's see what Walt says. I mean, have you ever heard of them controlling elephants?
I haven't, but, you know, there's a children's story about the mouse and the elephant and how the elephant was afraid of the mouse, and I don't remember the rest of the story. So I would very well believe that, you know, the elephant has a fear of some of those stinging insects.
You ever heard anything like that, Pat?
Well, we don't have any wild elephants in Rochester, so maybe it works.
Thank goodness we don't. I think there was that one year that the elephant got down Main Street. That would have been a funny way to corral it. We're going to take a very short break and come back and look at other questions you have about what to do about insects in the yard, about how to tell them apart, their question about certain colors that we're going to see. And we also want to talk about the latest, what we know and what we don't know, about colony collapse disorder. I want to talk to Pat about how her career has been impacted by colony collapse disorder. So it's all coming up next on Connections on member-supported public radio. elephants. You know, we got a lot. On the next Connections, it's Innovation Friday. It's always a packed 2 hours when we visit with our partners from the Innovation Trail. Among other things, we'll look at new numbers showing Rochester having an abnormally high number of pedestrian injuries and fatalities. Urban design and the pedestrian, coming up on Innovation Friday on Connections with Evan Dawson.
Superfoods, so nutritious they are life and wallet changing.
Good for your body and also good medicine and also good for money.
But are you getting what you pay for? I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll have that story and the rest of the day's business news next time on Marketplace. It's from 8 p.m.
This evening at 6:30.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Your questions answered on bees this hour. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Walt Nelson's here from Cornell Cooperative Extension. Pat Bono is here, among other things, the owner of Seaway Trail Honey and the project director of the New York State Bee Wellness Program. And we heard from Jeremy online. Jeremy says he's a Little League coach and says he feels like this spring all of their fields are infested with bees in the ground in Little Leagues. Walt, I know that's not the first time you heard that. What do you say to that?
No, it is a ground-dwelling bee that likes compacted clay soils, and that's what the infield skin and the baselines are. And that is just perfect habitat for them to drill into and make a nest and lay an egg. They're a solitary bee, so there's one in there, and there's going to be an egg in there, and they're going to put some pollen in there to nurture that egg when it hatches out into a larva, and then a bee's going to emerge from there. And, you know, they may buzz by you as they're entering or leaving that hole, and then they, you know, well, hey, it's a bee, you know, it's going to sting me, da-da-da-da. But they're not interested and not going to be stinging anybody. They're just going to be an annoyance in your way.
But if you do get a call about a Little League field, or if for coaches out there, and I know this happens, and they do want to remove them, what do you recommend, or how do you do it?
Well, in public space like that, it's going to take a commercially certified applicator to apply a pesticide.
And it's going to kill them.
And that's right.
Okay.
That's right. And it's a great pollinator that we'd be losing. And it's only for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, another option. Look for the telltale. It's like almost like sawdust around the holes. So see, it's almost like little pencil holes in the ground. Sometimes I tell people another option is to just get out the sprinkler, get out the hose, mulch it. If it's really crucial, you can. If you don't want to use pesticides, tarp it. Put down tarp. It'll kill the bees. But that's just one way of dealing with the situation.
Aaron in Rochester, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead, Aaron.
Hi, I had a experience as a child one time. In my backyard, I had this really big, it seemed like a bee. It had a really long tail. It had black and yellow on it. I was wondering for the longest time what that could be.
You've got the room speechless here. Walt?
There are giant hornets that have a stinger on them. Well, it's an ovipositor. It looks like a hypodermic needle that is used by that particular hornet to lay eggs through the bark into a tree. And so that thing is a very strong hypodermic needle to be able to get through the bark and into the tree to lay an egg. And that's what it is. It's an ovipositor. It is not a stinger. And some of those giant hornets, actually, it's somewhat comical to watch them fly around because they've got this enormous instrument on the back end, and they have trouble flying because it is so big and so heavy.
But we're not talking about around here, right, Walt?
We will see those around here.
Yes,
on occasion. They're not a very common insect around here, but they are here.
So I wasn't in danger at any time?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much, Aaron. Walt is, you will never meet someone who's more of a defender of the bees. And I love that. He's always making us think about ways that We can handle them without destroying them. Now, we had a question, a caller who wanted to ask a question off the air, reading this here. If a hive dies during the winter, will a new swarm move in, or do they have to clean the hive out? Pat, you have expertise there.
Well, it's wishful thinking that they would do that. It does happen. It can happen. It's possible, whether the hive has been cleaned out or not. What I'm telling a lot of people, and I did this myself this past weekend, is clean out the hive and just spray it with a 1 to 10 bleach solution to just clean it up. But swarms are opportunistic. If they find a good spot, they'll just move in regardless of the condition.
All right, and I want to now move our attention to the whole notion of colony collapse disorder. We've had a few questions on Twitter already saying, you know, we've seen the recent stories, and it feels like every few months we see sort of a new study or a new indicator on what it's all about. So let me start with a short answer first. Walt, do you think we know what causes colony collapse disorder?
The short answer?
Yeah.
No.
Pat, do you think we know what causes colony collapse disorder?
Actually, colony collapse disorder was really a syndrome that was around in 2006, 2007, and it's really rare for anyone to see that anymore.
Okay.
The true definition. What has happened in the news, in the press, the definition's been watered down, diluted, changed.
Every time you lose a hive. It's colony collapse disorder. I lost my hive, you know, and it's there's a lot of things that have been lumped under that.
Well, that's an important point here. What does colony collapse disorder look like, the actual disorder? Pat, when you see colony collapse disorder, it doesn't look the same, right? Essentially, they just vacate, they're gone, or the bees are dying.
It's a depopulation of the hive. There will be young bees. There'll be a small patch of young bees with brood, very small patch, with a queen. And it has to meet certain criteria. And really, the true definition of what CCD is, which is what I just described, mm-hmm. is extremely rare.
It is rare.
So the CCD has been co-opted, actually.
The term has been co-opted.
Right. Yes.
But have we seen larger numbers of bees dying in unexplained terms in recent years?
Actually, things are looking up.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, there's been a couple of surveys done. Most recently is the Bee Inform survey. It's a national survey. And let me see, it was down to 23% loss this year nationwide, which is pretty good. Previous year, I think it was closer to 40%. So things are starting to look up. Of course, no one really truly knows why. Hopefully this study, they do a survey, and they do measure a lot of things that beekeepers do, where they go, what they use on their beehives, the weather, et cetera, and hopefully we can get an answer.
Let's grab another call before we get to the latest ostensible news, though I think there's some skepticism in this room about just how valid the most recent study is. We're going to get to that in just a second, but Paul and Victor, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, hey, how you doing today?
Good.
I was wondering, you know, they have that little cartoon character on the water thing, on the, like a public service announcement. You know, preserve the water. You got the little fish. You know which one I'm talking about?
I don't know offhand.
It's be a water hero or be an environmental hero,
okay.
Or something like
mm-hmm.
that, you know? And it's on television all the time. And the guy's talking about don't dump things into the storm drains and so on and the lakes and so on like that. The thing with the bees is nobody knows how important the bees are. And they see bees and they kill them, you know, which drives me crazy. And I always tell people, don't kill the bees. Call a beekeeper. He'll come and get them and save them instead of killing them. So, you know, this radio show is awesome, but do you ever thought of going, like, more onto the television sector and a public service announcement educating people on bees?
Well, I understand the sentiment, and I appreciate it, Paul. I mean, I think that's part of what we're trying to do right here, and my guess is you say thumbs up to the sentiment there.
Oh,
Walt.
Yeah. You know, it gives me the thought is that maybe we ought to talk to Rocky out there, the U of R, and have
That's
him.
Right.
to help us spread the good word about bees.
The yellow jackets, right?
Yeah, that's a yellow jacket. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But no, the point is well taken, though, that that in many ways, as much as we may laugh, it's serious to you, isn't it, Walt? That,
yes.
The role and the function is serious.
They are major the honeybee is a major pollinator of apples. And a number of and squash and a number of other crops. And if we like almonds, for example, or we like citrus and we like apples, we've got to have some bees around there. I mean, it's not the exclusive domain of the honeybee. The native pollinators, the solitary bees, do help in that, but the honeybees do their work.
I'm looking at the headline that came out in Mother Jones and many other places this week, and the headline says, "Did scientists just solve the bee collapse mystery?" And again, I think our guests say no, but let me just go ahead and read to you, and we'll see what Pat and what Walt say. A new Harvard study points the finger at neonics as the key driver of colony collapse disorder. The experiment couldn't have been simpler. Working with nearby beekeepers, Harvard researcher Chen-Ching Liu and his team treated 12 colonies with tiny levels of neonics and kept 6 control hives free of the popular chemicals. All 18 hives made it through summer without any apparent trouble. Come winter, though, the bees in 6 of the 12 treated hives vanished, leaving behind empty colonies, the classic behavior of colony collapse disorder. None of the 6 control hives experienced a colony collapse disorder-style disappearing act, although one did succumb to a common to bees gut pathogen called Nosema. So they're talking about neonics. First definition, Walt, what is neonics?
Neonicotinoids is a class of insecticides that is relatively new as far as pesticides go, and it is a little more toxic, a little hotter material against insects, including bees. And because it is so effective against a lot of plant pests, it is becoming a popular material to use. And so there's more of it out there. And is there a misapplication somewhere, or do bees come in contact with it? So they're coming in contact or encountering this new class of pesticide. And since it's the new one on the block, folks are saying that, well, yeah, that's a leading cause, or that's the cause. Is it a contributor to the loss of some bees? I would say assuredly that, you know, if you've got any pesticide, the pyrethrins we talked about, they are a contributor to some bee losses somewhere.
There's probably, it sounds to me like you don't think we're ever going to find a single smoking gun on colony collapse disorder.
I seriously doubt it. I think, as Pat said earlier, we have lumped a lot of bee losses under the umbrella of colony collapse. And it could be a harsh winter that did a hive in. It could be mites that did it, that did them in. It could be a pesticide. And, you know, it just sort of puts the straws on the camel's back. And after a while, the poor thing collapses.
Pat, do you think we're ever going to find a single smoking gun on colony collapse?
The closest, well, colony collapse, I don't like that terminology.
I know.
The closest
we
can come to reducing the number of bee deaths in the United States is controlling the Varroa mite. And that is the most important factor in bee deaths. Beekeepers in the United States have had it for almost 20 years. Every single beehive has Varroa mites. They're like giant ticks on a bee. And for this to look at a hive of bees and know that they have all these mites on them, and these mites also serve as vectors of viruses, which really needs a lot of study, the viruses. This cannot be normal. If you were to have, say, livestock and they were full of fleas or ticks and say, oh, there must be something else bothering, affecting my cows, and not even looking at the external parasites, that's the mites are the main problem, and they really need the attention In fact, recently, Jeff Pettis, Dr. Jeff Pettis of the USDA, testified in Washington, D.C., and he did remind people that, yes, it was the mites that is the main cause for death of honeybees in the United States.
Dr. Pettis is also quoted in this article in Mother Jones talking about the fact that he agrees with this panel that we're not seeing a smoking gun with colony collapse, but he did also say that Dr. Pettis, who participated in several papers on the recent decline of honeybee health, including a 2012 study showing that bees exposed to tiny levels of a neonic were significantly more prone to succumb to the gut pathogen Nosema than unexposed bees. Pettis said that he thought this study may add to the list of studies showing that pesticides pose a significant health threat to honeybees, but he is not ready to declare it the smoking gun. For example, he said this sample size, 12 hives and 6 controls, is far, far too small. Also, a bit of good news, lining right up with what Pat said, the USDA has released a nationwide survey asking beekeepers how their hives fared over the winter. The report found 23.2% of hives collapsed, the lowest levels since 2005-2006, and down from the peak of about 35%. In the winter of 2007-2008. So again, lines right up with what Pat said. The one place that's the outlier is in Ohio. Beekeepers in Ohio reported anywhere from 50 to 80% losses. I wonder, Pat, if there's any reason to know why Ohio would have been hit worse than other places.
It may have just be reporting who reported. Mm-hmm. For instance, with New York Bee Wellness, I did a survey for just New York beekeepers. Non-migratory, so these are bees that stayed within New York State over the winter. And of the beekeepers who did report, 46% of their hives were lost due to the bad winter. So, and starvation because of the cold and the bad winter. So that it might be just a reporting item with the Ohio beekeepers that maybe a lot more non-migratory beekeepers reported.
All right, let's. I want to get to a question from a caller who had a separate question off the air again, and reading here. Caller wants to know how to start a bee farm. I think Pat's probably a person who can help address that. If you wanted to get started, what would you do, Pat?
Oh, a bee farm. Oh, I wonder how many hives they're interested in. The main thing is take classes, do a lot of reading, spend time with beekeepers. Look at how beehives are manipulated, what's involved, you know, business plans. Things like that.
A couple hours every month at those periodic meetings of the Rochester beekeepers, I think, would rubbing shoulders with those folks would give you a good dose of reality and a lot of good information. And if you come out of there still smiling, looking for bees, then you have some colleagues. I got dissuaded because I wanted to do that, and I talked to a beekeeper, and I was pushing him, and he was pushing back, and he was pushing back, and in the end it was, I think I'll just have him help him extract honey, and I'll get the honey and not have to futz with the bees.
We're talking about bees, colony collapse disorder. A bit of good news on this hour, just reporting some of the newest numbers, indicating that some of the lowest levels since 2005-2006 of colonies collapsing over the winter. And again, if you've been listening to Pat Bono this hour of New York State Bee Wellness, that it's hard to even pinpoint a single disorder for most of those losses anyway. So perhaps we're going in a better direction with the health of the honeybees in the state and around the country. We're talking to Pat Bono about this issue, among many others. Walt's here from Cornell Cooperative Extension. And if you want to jump in with a question, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Pat, I've never even heard of, until recently, the New York State Bee Wellness Program and workshop. So what is the mission? How do you go about doing what you do on a statewide level?
First of all, it's an offshoot of the Empire State Honey Producers, a state beekeeping organization. It was a grant that I applied for through that organization. And I will be reapplying for more funds this month, actually, for the program. And it's basically a train the trainer program where beekeepers from different clubs around the state and also from Connecticut and Ohio go to be trained by the top bee experts in the country. And then they, in turn, go back to their clubs and teach other beekeepers in recognition of bee disease. It's been very successful, and we have so many people that are interested in beekeeping. They want to get into beekeeping, and beekeeping is not easy. Recognizing bee disease is just so important. You cannot do without disease recognition for honeybees and be successful in beekeeping. Even if you do know, there's no guarantee. Easy.
John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hi. Yes, I'm a brand new beekeeper. I have two brand new hives this year. I'm kind of intimidated by it, but I'm excited. But I had a question in the winter. Has anybody ever tried to put insulation around the hives to protect the bees from the extreme cold?
Yes.
I mean, is that a viable
It is a very viable.
Walt just thrust his thumb in the air, even though you can't see it. Walt, you're not on television yet. but I just saw a thumbs up. Go ahead, Walt.
I got my baptism of beekeeping by a gentleman who came to New York from Manitoba. And I think it's kind of cold up there. And the only way that he knew how to keep hives over the winter was to wrap them in the winter, bring a couple of hives together, and you get mass insulation and insulate and wrap that hive with insulation over the winter to protect them and allow their body heat to keep the thing warm. And his colleagues were losing bees in the winter, and I don't know that I ever heard him say he lost bees in the winter because he wrapped his bees. And that was the key that he felt was to improve winter survivals, to wrap the hives.
Okay, because I was concerned that in the spring, you know, if you didn't unwrap them soon enough, they could actually keep the hive cold and not let the sun's heat get to it. So I wasn't sure, you know, when you'd open it up and take the insulation off. You know, and how that would work.
It's been a couple of years since I've rubbed shoulders with him, and I've forgotten when he came around and unwrapped those things, but it was in the late winter that he'd unwrap it and let the hive come into spring.
Thanks for the call, John. I hope that helps you there. Maxine, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead, Maxine.
Hi. I'm working with the Monroe Village Farmers Market this year. We're starting up Wednesday, starting on June 11th from 4 to 7 p.m. in the Blessed Sacrament parking lot. And we have a community table there every week. And I'm wondering, I was actually hoping that we could do some bee education there. And I'm wondering if AdierView provides community education, and then if you could come to our farmer's market.
Oh, that's a possibility. I just went to number 8 school here in the city of Rochester, a bunch of second graders. I occasionally do teaching, outreach. Sure. Give me a call.
Great. And how can I reach you?
You can reach me.
Go ahead, Pat.
RochesterHoney@gmail.com.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the call. A few more minutes left talking bees here. And Mary online said, I feel like whenever my kids and I are outside, the bees come out. Are there certain foods they're more attracted to than others?
Well, sweets.
Sweets. It's simple as that. They like sugar. Huh?
Yes, they love my hummingbird feeder until I put a bee guard in front of it. You shield the syrup from the bees, and then the hummingbirds are not bothered by the bees. The bees will chase the hummingbirds away.
Yeah, one thing I want to say about hummingbird feeders, do a lot of beekeeper a favor. If people color that water and not just leave it clear, and do put the guards on it so the bees can't get to it, believe it or not, a lot of bees will go to these hummingbird feeders and they'll go back to the hive. And many beekeepers may think they have honey, where it's just sugar water from the hummingbird feeders. Mm-hmm. So please color it.
And a different Mary wants to say that my mother had hundreds, if not thousands, of bees in the attic of her house. How in the world could she have gone that long and never known it? And I don't know how long, I don't know the story, but Walt, I guess that part of your point is that they're not always aggressive, right?
And it may not be honeybees. It may be paper wasps, you know, some sort of a stinging insect in one season can go from, you know, one female going there and start laying eggs to a significant colony that would be, you know, in the size of a paper wasp, a basketball-sized group of paper wasps.
But what's the life cycle of those insects?
The paper wasp, it's an annual. Most of that hive dies off in the winter, except for a wintering female, which will go out
and winter over in the duff and the edge of the forest or the field.
Well, and to Mary's question, then, I've seen once in a while you see those massive hives that, you know, are the size of a wall. They've taken some ridiculous thing. And how in the world can you get that many bees there if they're dying inside of a year?
They build that in 1 year.
Wow.
And I have on occasion, after a good heavy frost into late October, I've gone up in the tree or got a pole pruner and I've cut one of those things down, and it's an art object in my house because there is nothing living in that after a good hard freeze.
Wow. The paper wasps.
Yes.
Yes, very ornate. As far as the bees building honeycomb in the houses, those colonies can last for years and years and years. And some people may not notice because all bees have a flight path. So if they're way up by the attic, by the roof line, people won't really notice them. I was just at a place in Webster yesterday, and some bees got into a crotch of a tree. It was like 20 feet up, and I said, you know, they're not really going to bother people on the sidewalk if they're flying at that height.
Just a few more seconds left. Let me close with this, Pat. You've given us some optimism that the health of bees is better than it's been in a good number of years, and then some good skepticism about colony collapse disorder. But what do you want folks to know at home, especially when it comes to general day-to-day question with bees around the house? What would you want people to think about?
Buy honey from local beekeepers. It was a harsh year here in New York State. A lot of the local beekeepers had suffered a lot of losses. Support the beekeepers, and when you spray, please don't spray flowers.
Walt said that. How would you wrap it up, Walt?
And if you've got local honey, and you have local allergies, that honey will help mitigate that allergy. Another reason to get local honey rather than honey from Florida, as much as I might like orange blossom honey.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting stuff. Thanks very much, Walt and Pat, for leading us discussion on
bees.
And pleasure was mine.
We always appreciate it. Thanks for all the various listener calls and comments online. I knew Walt was saying, we're going to talk for an hour. I said, you just wait. People have so many things they want to talk about with bees, and it is true. Hope we answered your question. Thanks for being with us. Innovation Friday tomorrow on Connections. Thanks to Dave Campo and our staff here. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks for listening to Member Supported Public Radio.